How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Next week is the Royal Rumble, but heading into that, we've got a huge week of news to talk about. It's the go-home show for Raw tomorrow night. Supposedly, a Miz versus Edge champion versus champion match. Wouldn't be surprised if that ended up being changed. We'll talk about that later on in the program. The Royal Rumble, 40 men this year. It's been 30, dating back to the very beginning. This year, they're bumping it up to 40. Does it make any difference? Is anybody going to buy the show with 40 men as opposed to 30? We'll discuss that on the program today. WWE earnings coming out in a couple of weeks, and the numbers are not looking good. And in fact, when the announcement was made that the numbers were not going to be what analysts were expecting to be, the stock plunged on Friday. So we'll discuss some of the reasons for that, house show business, and more. Last night, the UFC Fight for the Troops show in Fort Hood, Texas. Very good show. Made some stars and a fun night of action. We'll run down the results of that program and talk some of the booking of UFC heading into 2011. Got a lot of arrests and interesting situations. A former WWE, or WWF actually, and WCW champion was arrested a couple of days ago. Marijuana possession, we're going to talk about that. Plus, an incident with Great Khali where guns were shot into a crowd, perhaps of children. It is a very strange story, particularly since we don't really know what happened because this took place in India, and all of the stories that we've gotten thus far are, well, quite different. So we'll talk about that. Plus, Kurt Angle rushed back to the United States. His fiancée was in rough shape, and she gave birth several weeks early, but things appear to be okay. So we'll talk about that situation there. GSP versus Silva, the final ROH tapings, including the results and the, report on the final match in the history of ROH on HDNet. Apparently, it was pretty good. Plus a bunch of other stories as well. I didn't even get through half of the stuff that we're going to talk about today on this program. Also, take your emails, perhaps your phone calls as well. Going to be a good time. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We'll be right back. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Let's jump right into it. Tons of news today. As we were in the break, Mike reminded me of a story that we hadn't written down to discuss at the beginning of the program, that being a rather big story. The former TNA World Heavyweight Champion, who's fighting for the belt on the next pay-per-view, Jeff Hardy, went to court on the 20th. The idea was that he was going to plea bargain his drug charges down, and the entire thing would be wrapped up. As it turns out, it has been postponed yet again. Either one of the sides fell through, or the judge decided he was not going to go along with the agreement that both the defense and the prosecution had made. Jeff Hardy's side and the district attorney had all agreed that the charges were going to be plea bargained down and the entire thing would be wrapped up. They show up in court and we've got another continuance. And Mike, I know it didn't surprise you.
No, for some reason, I don't know why, but it's just the nature of almost any celebrity thing or really any trial at all that you even, the most local of one that you hear about in the news just seems to get dragged out forever. And for some reason, even though there looked like there was some finality to this, the exception of him being sentenced, I don't know. It doesn't surprise me at all. They're going back to court now on February 16th, and I guess we just sit and wait and see exactly what happened with which side was it that decided to pull out of it, or if it was the judge. But again, not good for TNA because of, the obvious of problems with it getting in the way. And again, it's debatable whether they should have signed him in the first place. They did. They put the belt on him with a lot of this stuff going on. And it's just, again, to me, it would be getting in the way and it would be something I want to try to distance myself from. If I were them, I know they're not really on the radar that much, where even if he's sentenced to jail, it will make the news, it will make TMZ, but it won't be really a shock effect at all to them. But with that said, it's just something I would want to stay as far away from if I could, and it throws itself into the mix again with him being in that title match.
Speaking of title matches, the big show of the early part of 2011, the Royal Rumble, is taking place next week. We'll be on the show next week doing a preview of the event once we have the entire card, and I don't think there's too much to be added. But the big news on Raw last Monday, actually it was first announced on WWE.com, I believe, but they confirmed it on Raw that there are, in fact, going to be 40 men in the Royal Rumble this year. They're billing it as the biggest Royal Rumble of all time. And what are your thoughts on 40 men versus 30? Does it make any difference whatsoever?
No. As far as anybody wanting to buy it, no, not yet. Now, if they do something somehow this year to really, because I guess there's 25 guys that are in it now after SmackDown. They've added the whole core, which is not a surprise. So now there's 25. You have 15 spots left remaining. And if they go with mystery guys going into it and they actually bring back some legends and they do some, you know, throw some curveballs in there, then yeah, maybe next year when they do announce a bunch of dudes, you know, it allows for, you know, some interest to peak back up. But I think as of now, no, because I don't think anybody really expects anything to happen. I mean, the way it's gone, people know Triple H is probably going to come back on that show. The best he could do is come back this week. And, you know, to be honest, even though it would make sense to bring Triple H back this week on TV to build towards something to the Rumble, at this point, I would just let it be a surprise at the Rumble or be, you know, a quote-unquote surprise. But it's how many other curveballs they can throw in there, I think, that would make this thing matter, and it's not going to really matter for this year. We won't be able to really tell. I don't believe, because I don't think this buy rate is going to be all that great. It's going to be a Royal Rumble buy rate, but that's really going to be it.
The official list thus far, we've got Alberto Del Rio, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, Daniel Bryan, Darren Young, David Hart Smith, David Otunga, Ezekiel Jackson, who I believe will probably have the Jackson part of his name dropped. He's listed on upcoming house show lineups as simply Ezekiel.
Big Zeke.
Big Zeke. Heath Slater, Husky Harris, John Cena, John Morrison, Justin Gabriel, Mark Henry, Michael McGillicuddy, Primo, R-Truth, Rey Mysterio, Sheamus, Ted DiBiase, Tyson Kidd, Wade Barrett, William Regal, Yoshitatsu, and Zack Ryder. That is your lineup thus far for the Rumble this year. And of those available names, who would you say has a chance at winning the Rumble this year?
Yeah, see, I was going to put $10 down on the 5 million to 1 bet that is Primo, but I mean, just the most obvious names. I mean, Alberto Del Rio, John Cena. I guess you could actually throw Triple H in there if he does come back, although I don't think he would win it. Although, I mean, I would assume they're going to do Triple H and Sheamus. It would make the most sense going into Raw or into WrestleMania. But, I mean, again, unless they add some surprise names, I mean, those guys, I mean, Punk's got an outside shot, I guess, but I don't think you would do that because I would want to lead to something with his group. I don't think they'll cut the legs out. They'll probably go all the way to WrestleMania with that. So I don't know. Barrett and The Undertaker, so that probably won't happen. I would say, you know, Cena is the most obvious. But I'll say this, is it's chugged along with Alberto being on every show and how much they're showcasing him. Even though I can see him not winning the Rumble, I could see him, you know, I could see him being screwed over because of how much they pushed his destiny and everything. But I could see him coming out of the Elimination Chamber or something like that and actually ending up in that, you know, the title spot that the Royal Rumble winner, you know, probably should have.
The Alberto Del Rio one is interesting in the sense that, and actually I was kind of thinking about this on Raw too in a different sense, but Alberto's on TV like every week talking about how he's going to win the Rumble. And, you know, that means one of two things to me. Number one, he's going to be humiliated and he's going to come out number one and be tossed out immediately. Or he's going to go, actually, I guess there's three options. Number two is he goes a long, long way, but gets thrown out by somebody at the end and that builds up your WrestleMania feud. Or he wins. And I guess the one on Monday that really had me thinking was when John Cena came out and he was doing that promo with Miz and, you know, usually these things aren't said for no reason, but he made the comment that John Cena against Miz is not a WrestleMania main event. but John Cena versus Randy Orton is. And I thought, how strange to go out there on television and admit that Miz in the main event of WrestleMania is not WrestleMania worthy. I mean, you know, as of a while ago, Miz was going to be in the main event of WrestleMania. So I just don't understand going out there and making that sort of statement unless, you know, I guess they could try to prove that statement wrong in booking or something like that. But it just, I would never have used that line.
They've done that backward, logic a lot, though. But, you know, their excuse would be it's playing into Miz is the chicken-ass, you know, champion who, you know, the banana peel and Alex Riley and all, you know, and, you know, Cena pointed it out, too. You know, you need help to beat Jerry Lawler. You know, he should be the champion right now. So, I mean, they've been playing that up so much, so it does play into that. If, come post-WrestleMania, I mean, he's got to, I would say, if that's going to be the case, he gets a dominant win over Randy, not a dominant win, but he gets a clean, straight-up win over Randy Orton at Royal Rumble, and they continue to build him up strongly. I mean, that's what, you know, then it would make sense to me, and I wouldn't have any problem with it. But if he doesn't, then you just scratch your head and go, well, that didn't make any sense. It didn't need to be said.
Do you expect a clean, straight-up win by The Miz over Randy Orton at the Royal Rumble?
I can see interference, there being a near fall where Miz thinks he gets it, Orton comes back, and then Miz actually does get it. I mean, that's what I would do to make the most sense, because it gives a legitimate win. It doesn't hurt Orton. Nobody's going to hate Orton, you know, or love Orton any less for that. So it's, I think, the best idea you could do.
Well,
everything from now on builds into the Rumble, so unless you're going to have him get, you know, beat at the Elimination Chamber or weakened at the Elimination Chamber, which you just, they don't have to do that.
I just have very little faith in them giving Miz a clean win over anyone above the level of John Morrison at this point, and I think that's one of the reasons that people aren't taking Miz all that seriously. And,
well, yeah.
I mean, I've mentioned this many times. We can talk about this a little bit after the break, but I hate the gimmick of the undeserving champion of the world. I think it's such a stupid gimmick, and I'll get your thoughts on that when we come back from the break. And we've got a lot of other stuff Rumble related to talk about as well. So that's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were discussing the Royal Rumble. And Mike, your thoughts on the gimmick of the undeserving champion?
Every once in a while, it's fine, but it just, everybody in...
Hold on. I got to cut you off there.
Yep.
Name the last time this was fine.
If it was done once in a while... I'm not. If you just did this as it were somebody in a transitional reign or something like that, fine. But they've done it with Swagger. TNA does it all the time. They've done it with Mysterio. They did. I mean, they've done this so many times, so often with all of their champions that it just, and that's not just them. It's all of wrestling that does this, where it loses its effect. If you did it once in a while, or, you know, Ric Flair did it in a way for years with, he always needed help from the Horsemen, and a lot of people that were hardcore WWF fans went, Jesus, well, he never wins, he always needs help. And that was during a time where everything started to change a little bit with how people thought of things, but it's along those same lines. There's somebody that could pull it off. Somebody that's established. If Jericho were to do something like this, because of how he could play it up, that's fine. But when you're growing Miz, and Miz, they've done a really good job, and he's done a really good job growing himself, you shouldn't do it often. One, I guess you could say you shouldn't do it all. You shouldn't do it often, and you should only do it with certain guys if you are going to do it once in a while. And this isn't the guy. And again, it's a telltale sign at the Royal Rumble. You know, if he gets a sloppy win over Orton, or a just, you know, it continues along the line, then no, there's no point in building him up for WrestleMania. But this is a telltale sign here, and again, to me at least, I don't see how him winning a clean match over Randy Orton, it makes the most sense for everyone involved, for all reasoning involved. There's no reason to screw with him and to, you know, have him get a, you know, craptastic win, because if you are going to do that, then you better beat him at the Elimination Chamber and get him into something more second tier, him and Morrison again at WrestleMania or something like that.
To me, an undeserving champion works. Well, with Ric Flair, there's a big difference in Ric Flair and Miz. I mean, there are obviously a lot of them, but, you know, if you're a champion and there's a number one contender, and the story you're trying to tell is that you're, as the champion, you're great, but the number one contender is just a little bit better, and he should be the champion, but you keep keeping your title through nefarious means or cheating or interference or that sort of thing. That's one thing. But Miz, I think, is a guy that, you know, if it had not been for his win over Morrison, it would be even worse. But he's a guy that I think most fans look at him and they think everybody at the top is more deserving than Miz. Everybody at the top could beat Miz. You know, most of the mid-card could beat him and has beaten him, you know, with the exception now of John Morrison. I mean, to me, that's like a completely different thing. I mean, this is a guy that's just, he's a geek with a belt. And you just can't do that because even, I mean, it's one thing if a geek wins the belt and your idea is, well, everybody knows he's a geek and everybody knows he's not going to have the title for very long. And so, you know, someone deserving is going to beat him at any time. So I must tune into TV to see this. I must buy these pay-per-views because it's going to happen at any moment. That's fine if people actually care about your championship, but they don't even care about your championship. So they don't care about your belt, and you've got a geek holding the belt. There's like, I can't see a single, like, not one single positive in this scenario.
No, there's not. There's not, except for any excuse that, you know, somebody who is writing this out would have the way to say, well, you know, at the end this will all work out where, you know, he'll get the big win on his own or something like that. But it's just, no, it makes no sense to me entertainment-wise or business-wise with a guy that, and again, it's, you have, he's done the perfect job reestablishing himself. I mean, they really have. They cooked on something with him and Riley together and all of that stuff and how he delivers the promos, how he's gotten over to people more mainstream and to the MTV crowd and all that sort of stuff. There's no reason to beat him. And there's no reason to, you know, it's okay to do the storyline where he's a little bit weak, but at some point, yeah, he finally got a clean win over Morrison. You had that. And again, now from here, get the win over Orton because it makes the most sense, because otherwise, then what are you going to do at WrestleMania with him?
I mean, as much as I love that match with Lawler, I mean, seriously, he needed help from an NXT geek to beat Jerry the King Lawler.
A 61-year-old man.
A 61-year-old announcer. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And again, if it stops at the Rumble, okay, they were building to something even though you didn't like getting into it. But if they don't, well, then you just scratch your head and go, you know, why?
And again, you know, if they don't care, and this all ties into the stock slide on Friday in some ways as well, business for WWE is not great. I mean, it's not. I mean, they're not losing money. They're still going to have a I think $6 to $8 million in profit over the quarter. Although, you know, the expectations were 12. So if they were expecting a $12 million profit and they end up doing only a $6 million profit, that's, you know, their revenue has been cut in half. So, you know, if you don't care about that, you know, if you've got so much money, so much cash on hand that you haven't yet paid out in the dividend, you don't really care that your profits are cut in half, then if you want to push Miz as a weak champion that's a geek with a belt, and John Cena is wrestling a geek with a belt in the main event of WrestleMania, and WrestleMania doesn't do a good number, then you can't bitch about it. You cannot complain about it after you've basically made your own bed. You did not build up a strong champion. You built up a geek, and then you put him in the main event of WrestleMania, and the show didn't do very well. And last year's show didn't do very well either. So, you know, if this show does, say, 450,000 domestic or even less, which is certainly possible without a Shawn Michaels Undertaker retirement match main event. I mean, it could do around 400,000 domestic buys. I mean, if that happens, I don't want to hear any complaining about business because these are problems that you created for yourself.
Yeah, and they would need something like that to actually happen, I think, for it to really kick in a little bit more because even though, I mean, because earnings have dropped, you know, dramatically several times. Well, I think the last time was in 09, February of 09, where it dropped under $10 a share. You know, Wall Street was expecting, I guess, around 17 cents a share. It's supposed to be, I guess, between 8 and 10 now. And there was a big sell-off on Friday. It's dropped to 12.42 is where it's sitting right now. That will end up being back up to close to $15 a share, you know, after WrestleMania. It does it every year. Now, what will shock their system is if it doesn't. And that's what's going to need to happen, I think, before they, again, before it snaps somebody into maybe not thinking about that. But then again, what in recent history would expect you, even if that were to happen, for them to go, it was how we treated The Miz and not the name of the Survivor Series or something like that. Maybe they can change WrestleMania's name now, too.
You know, people often talk about how if things get bad enough, you know, they'll turn it around. And my question to you is, do you actually believe that they're going to turn it around? Because I remember in the summertime when they were talking about how you know, there was a conference call and Vince was talking about how these numbers were not good and he was not happy and this and that, and he said that, you know, it's all going to turn around at SummerSlam. We're going to start turning everything around at that show, and they didn't. So, you know, the next time he says, oh, man, you know, the stock didn't go up after WrestleMania and the show did 400,000 buys or whatever, you know, we really got to, you know, we're going to turn it around now. I mean, do you have faith that they can still turn this around, or that they've forgotten how to book professional wrestling now that it's no longer professional wrestling?
No, I mean, they can turn it around if they want to, and I would have faith that before things got to be too bad, that they could turn it around, because obviously there have been far weaker times in that company's history, even, you know, in the last 5 years. So, I have the faith that they could turn around. It's going to take a long time to kill it. Now, TNA, on the other hand, when you put them in that position, no, because all they have to do is book professional wrestling. They've tried everything else. They've thrown everything else against the wall, and they still refuse to try professional wrestling, even though it's the one thing that's worked for them. And I think, I mean, for anything you could say about Vince or Triple H or anybody, I think if things actually got that bad, they would still know actually how to do professional wrestling. It's just, it's never, as long as Vince is alive, it's never going to be their priority to do, because it's bigger than wrestling. We're not wrestling. We're sports entertainment. We're this, that, and the other. So until that, you know, until something revolutionary happens, that's the way it's going to be. But they just still have the base to do it. I am confident in that. It's just that I don't think they will, because they have all of the excuses not to, even though we could point to numbers and you point to the stock drop and you point to the dividend last time around not being paid out like it has been, which caused a lot of people like the Motley Fool and other people that have been behind the stock to pull back. Even with all those things, they'll say, hey, look, the rating for SmackDown is way up. They'll point to all of these other excuses, and until they run out of those excuses, it's probably always going to float along this way.
Tomorrow is supposed to be Miz versus Edge, champion versus champion. And, of course, my first thought would be that, you know, Miz is going to lose. I don't know what they're going to do. There's been talk in the next few weeks, not a permanent deal, but putting rated RKO back together, Edge and Orton. So I can see them doing something tomorrow where they turn it into a tag match or something like that and don't actually do the singles match or anything. But I guess we shall see where they go leading into the Rumble. There are a lot of different stories they have to tie together. There are a lot of different... actually, we got a lot of returns coming. I guess the question before we go to break, Triple H, do you put him in the Rumble or do you bring him back tomorrow?
I would actually bring him back at the Rumble. I really would. I know that it would probably make more sense to have him on TV to build to that, but maybe I would play his music or tease it or something like that. But I think you've waited this long, you might as well bring him back at the Rumble, make it your quote-unquote surprise for Monday night.
So do you have him come back as a surprise at the Rumble or an announced return?
No, I haven't come. You might as well, I don't know, maybe you hint at it with Sheamus out there cutting a promo, you play his music or something like that, but then that's it, and then you just have him come out as a, you know, surprise late in the Rumble.
I would probably have him, I don't even know, really. I mean, part of me thinks surprise. I mean, the show's probably going to do all right. I just don't know what Hunter means as a draw nowadays. I don't know if you announce him. Actually, we're up against a break. We'll talk about this a little bit when we come back, but I don't know. Let me think about this during the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here at Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also at WrestlingObserver.com, here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. For the break, we were talking about Triple H and whether he should return as a surprise at the Rumble or tomorrow night on Raw. And I was thinking about this briefly during the break, very briefly, in fact. And I was asked somewhat of a similar question. Somebody on our show Friday, we do shows over at WrestlingObserver.com pretty much every day. And Friday we had an open lines program. And somebody asked me a question. They said, you know, if Vince McMahon came to you and said, you are the head booker of WWE, build up WrestleMania to do a million buys or something like that, what would you do? And you can use anybody, including Shawn Michaels, coming back for another match. And my theory in answering this question is, if I were brought back as the booker of WWE, or if I brought into WWE as the booker, I would not use Shawn Michaels in WrestleMania this year. And some people would say, well, you're out of your mind. Why would you not use Shawn Michaels, for crying out loud? And Shawn Michaels is, you know, when I was growing up, he was one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Why would I not use him? Well, the answer is, if I'm being brought in as the booker of WWE, my goal is to make this thing work and to turn this thing around. And I'm going to look long-term. I'm not going to be looking for a short-term fix. And I guess you could argue that if I don't boost WrestleMania numbers, I could be fired. But I'm presuming I'm going to be given a chance. If I'm being brought in, I don't use Shawn Michaels, because the first thing that I do as booker of WWE is I do not kill the stipulation of last year's WrestleMania. That's like the last thing I would want to do. So Shawn Michaels retired at WrestleMania. He's done. And therefore, I'm going to honor that stipulation. So I guess looking at it from that perspective, if we're talking about the return of Triple H, yes, you could argue that, all right, it's probably not going to mean much. It may mean a few hundred buys, maybe even a couple of thousand, who knows, if you build Triple H as being at the Rumble. A surprise is going to be more fun for the people that purchase the show, that sort of thing. I mean, there are a lot of arguments that you can make, but to me, I'm going to presume that if you announce him in advance, you're going to sell at least a few pay-per-views. And so I am going to go in not wanting to make all of these mistakes that have been made in the past. I'm going to want to try to start turning things around from day one. And that means that tomorrow on Raw, you would have Triple H come out. You would have him make his big return, maybe beat the crap out of Sheamus, who knows. And he announces that he is the newest entrant into the Royal Rumble on Sunday. And everybody's got to pay to see his... Maybe I wouldn't even have him beat up Sheamus, quite frankly. Maybe I'd just have him show up and appear on the ramp and announce that his first match back is going to be at the Rumble. And my God, he's coming after Sheamus. So that's the way I do it. I think that it's time that if this is going to be fixed, if these problems in wrestling are going to be fixed, it's time to start just fixing the problems. It's time to stop adding to the problems. It's time to start announcing matches in advance. It's time to start building feuds. It's time to start booking backwards from WrestleMania a full year. It's time to take your time and stop changing your mind about things and making all of these changes. It's time to just go and do this stuff right. And so that's my opinion.
Well, and the other thing is, too, you don't even need a year. You really don't. If they just did it from Survivor Series on into that dead part of the year where everything's kind of sluggish, although, you know, again, most of the year is sluggish for WWE anymore outside of the, you know, the first 4 months where you have the Rumble, Elimination Chamber, and WrestleMania. But, I mean, by that definition, too, if you went with your scenario and having Triple H do that, it would take care of another problem, because he would actually go out there and probably call out Sheamus for wearing all of that goofy gear, which is assuming is what we're waiting for, too, and then that can disappear finally, and you can take care of the problem of having Sheamus look, you know, uber mid-card, and hopefully if we're all lucky, and if Sinbad is really lucky, Triple H can also spend some time making fun of Cody Rhodes to get rid of the jacket. And that would take care of that problem, too, of being, you know, opening match curtain jerker.
Cody's got way bigger problems than that jacket.
Well, that's true, but, you know. But, yeah, I mean, but, and you know what, and that scenario makes perfect sense, you know, absolutely, too. I don't think it's going to matter this week. I don't think it would sell enough pay-per-view buys that would warrant enough to convince me to just say, this year, you might as well just throw him out there. Now, if this was 2-3 weeks ago, absolutely, I think that would have made the most sense, and you could have touched on some things. Basically, when the Morrison match was over, you know, it's like Sheamus last week, they could have done it. Instead of having him come out and run down Daniel Bryan and run down Morrison, that's when you should have had him do that, but then have Triple H come out, and then you have 2 weeks leading into it where, you know, Triple H is more fired up. And the other thing it does, too, with announcing it ahead of time like you would want, is it, with all of those guys in the Rumble that everyone knows isn't going to win it, you at least have Triple H, who is a threat to win the Rumble no matter what. Even if he's saying he's going after Sheamus, he's at least a threat when he's in there to make people happy and think he might win the Rumble.
This is from Josh. He says, we keep hearing that one of the main reasons WWE will continue in its current kid and family-friendly direction is due to their toy deal with Mattel. I was wondering if you knew how much influence Mattel has on the direction of the company, how much their deal is worth to WWE, what would happen if WWE decided to push the PG boundaries. Well, number one, that is the reason that they're PG. Number two, we'll know a hell of a lot more when the earnings report comes out in a couple of weeks. And, you know, they're making a good deal of money, like a good deal of money off of the Mattel deal. And you have to look at the big picture as well. I mean, yes, the fact that WWE has a deal with Mattel is a big deal as far as why they are PG. But you also have to look at the people that run the company. We're talking Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, you know, and Linda, of course. They are now parents and grandparents. It's a very, very different time than it was in the mid-90s, where Vince McMahon had children, but they were teenagers. They were Shane McMahon and Stephanie McMahon, and older than teenagers as well, actually. Shane was significantly older than that, and Stephanie was getting out of her teens as well. There were
and
no children.
Stephanie was in the main age group that they were going after at that time when it was at its peak.
Yeah, there were no little children running around in the McMahon household. And, you know, you talk to a lot of people today, and we had Joe Gagné on the show last week, and he was talking about how he likes bringing his kids to the shows now, and he never would have done it in the 90s. And we had people, you know, posting on our board and writing in with very similar comments. And, you know, if you've, you know, the people that were growing up and in love with WWE in the mid-90s, you know, these are people that are now, they're in their early, mid, late 30s. And they're having children, and they're wanting to take their children to WWE shows. And Mike, you've got a child, and a lot of people listening to this probably would agree that if you've got a young child, you know, you would much rather take them to today's WWE than you would the WWE of the mid-90s. It is a different generation that is watching the programming now. I mean, you know, it sucks for people who are single or people who are younger or people that watch tapes and, you know, they're in their mid-20s now and they don't have a family and they watch tapes of the mid-90s and they're like, man, I wish it were that way again. But you got to realize that, you know, is whatever the ratings are now, you look at the actual numbers of people that are watching Raw, it's about 5.5 million people. And during the Monday Night Wars, it was not significantly higher than it is today. I mean, the number of people watching are just slightly below the number of people watching WWE, WWF during that period. And if you look at the average age of the viewers, the average age has gone up approximately 1 year every year since that date, which means it's the same people watching Raw. They're just getting older. And they're getting older, and they're having children, and they're starting families. And as much as some people hate this PG direction, there are a lot of people that are fans of the direction in the sense that they can now have their children watch the television with them. They can bring their children to the shows. And Vince has got grandchildren now, young grandchildren, and Triple H and Stephanie have young children. And those children are going to be young for many years now. And so if you're hoping for a PG-13 style show, you're probably going to have to wait until those children are teens. So it's going to be a while. So I think people need to look at that. It's more than just Mattel, and I don't think it's going to be something that's going to change anytime soon.
No, it's not just Mattel, and it's actually, I mean, just forget about Mattel for a minute, just the rest of their marketing campaign, it is very easy to sell PG, you know, compared to PG-13 and R and NC-17, obviously. I mean, you get more with that. The 7-Eleven deal that they had for SummerSlam with the cups and all those sorts of things. They were the ones who came out with the WWE Kids magazine that they started pushing a couple of years ago. They have all of these things generated at kids, and, you know, it's easier to market that way, number one. Number two, as you were saying with the age, you need to... I'm going to be turning 35 this year. You're going to be 36. We've all been watching now since the 80s. We grew up as wrestling fans. They need to, you know, basically grow wrestling fans again, too. And that's how do you do that? You start them off as kids. You get them jacked up into you know, loving John Cena and all that sort of stuff and hope that they grow with you and continue to grow. I mean, yeah, it is more than the Mattel deal. It's a lot of that stuff. Plus, as you said, you know, what I, obviously as a kid, you loved getting away with murder. You know, growing up with some of the things that were done on, you know, wrestling shows, it's not like, you know, Baby Doll got hit in the gut with a tennis racket, you know, by Jim Cornette, and Dusty Rhodes came out the next week and said, now she's never going to be able to have children anymore. And I just remember my mother looking at my father and just shaking her head and getting up and leaving. Is just, I can't believe my son is watching this. So it's not like we're going back to the 80s and everything is, you know, super PG or anything like that back then, too. I mean, there's always going to be some stuff, and PG doesn't have to mean boring, but, you know, they do need to do these things to grow the wrestling audience and to market themselves. You know, when it stops working, then they'll change just like they always have.
Well, as you noted, and as we've noted many times, if you think WWE is boring, it is not because it's PG. It's because it's boring.
That drives me nuts, too. They don't want it to be, you know, people don't want it to be PG because it's boring. No, it's uncreative. You can have, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can do that falls under PG. And the other thing that they could do, too, and they don't do it right now, is pay-per-views. They have the excuse, now they can do this with Raw anyway because it starts at 9 o'clock. They do have the excuse on pay-per-views to say, look, if your impressionable kid is still up at 10 o'clock, even though we've been marketing this to you, I mean, there's going to be a little bit of blood. I don't really see the problem with that as much. I think they can get away with that at least if they just do it on pay-per-view once in a while and, you know, again, draw that out and make it special. But still, yeah, the PG rating has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, people think that it's boring. It's got nothing to do with that.
Well, the blood's funny because it's like, you know, blood is considered too much for children, but like a gang beating that results in John Cena being stretchered out?
Yes.
That's okay? I think that'd be more traumatizing to a child.
I went to that show in Salisbury that I wrote for the newsletter, and I brought home the program that they always have, that oversized picture book. You know, he jumped on a couple guys right away, and who were they? Kofi Kingston, he liked Evan Bourne, Rey Mysterio, John Cena. All four of those guys, maybe not Kofi, but at least the other three have been injured badly on TV in the last year.
I would imagine that would be tough for a youngster.
Yeah, you'd figure as much. So a little bit of blood in a cage or something like that that a parent can easily explain away, or, you know, or something like that. Yeah, it is kind of funny how it works.
The quick question here before we go to break. Has team-based MMA ever been done? Not tag team wrestling, but two-on-two. I've actually seen tag team wrestling or tag team MMA locally, and it's been done in hook and shoot as well. But tag team MMA is awesome. The issue is you're not going to have the major promotions doing it because it's too much like pro wrestling, and you run the risk of, the place where I saw it done, they used pro wrestling rules, which means when you tagged your partner, you had 5 seconds to double team the opponent. That ain't going to fly with the commissions, but it was a hell of a lot of fun. You could probably find it on YouTube or something like that, so check it out. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wanted to make mention very quickly, yesterday Kurt Angle he left the TNA European Tour. His wife, or his fiancée was pregnant, and she collapsed. Very, very high blood pressure. They were forced to induce labor. Their child was born, I believe, 3 weeks premature. And this story got out yesterday, and everybody was very worried. I do not have complete confirmation, but the impression I have gotten from talking to people is that, and from a statement that Kurt Angle issued today, is that everybody is okay. I know for sure that the child is fine. We did not have an update on his fiance, but the impression I got today is that she is all right as well. So looks like everything is okay. It was a pretty scary situation yesterday, and Mike, as a father, you can only imagine the phone call when you're told that your pregnant fiance has collapsed and they're taking her to the hospital and may have to induce labor for your child.
Yeah, terrifying if you were up the street. Imagine being in France and then getting that news and then having to think about that the entire way. But yeah, terrifying situation. Even more terrifying, though, is I talked to Kurt Angle, and he said he's actually going to get a babysitter already for the child now that it's been born, and it's going to be Cybernetico.
Oh, boy. Oh, Mike. Well, at least everything was fine. Yes, there is an angle going on in Mexico where Cybernetico supposedly broke the leg of Laparca's child. And that's Mexico for you, everybody. When we come back, we've got a lot of other news to talk about today. We've also got some email questions to get into, a number of those. You know, we send those to WOL@WrestlingObserver.com. Going to jump into those after the break, and we'll also talk about the UFC Fight for the Troops show, talk about Josh Barnett and his issues with the California State Athletic Commission, the former WWF and WCW champion who has, in fact, been arrested. Charged with marijuana possession, out on a $1,000 bail. We'll talk about that after the break as well. So lots of things coming up. We'll get into it after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. If you've never headed up there, I don't know what your problem is. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go for daily news updates on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've got columns. We have radio shows. Thousands of radio shows, in fact, in our archives. In fact, I was doing the math the other day. I believe we've got over 5,000 hours of radio in the archives. So do the math. How long it would take for you to get through all of that? You can't! It is impossible. It is becoming the Smithsonian professional wrestling websites. No way to get all through all that stuff in a human lifetime. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking the news today. There is a lot of it. Sid Vicious, arrested. He was pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt, and when they pulled him over, next to him was, I think it was like, I can't remember how many grams, but marijuana was found. And so he was arrested. Released on $1,000 bail. It's all over the news in his hometown. I saw some of the news updates today, and one thing after another with these wrestlers, Mike.
It's, you know, about 18 grams of weed. Don't know what that would equal out to on the street, but I do know it equals out to a $1,000 bond that he had to pay, and he'll have to go in front of a judge for that. Also, driving without a license, too. So, not a good... If you're going to drive without a license and have, you know, your herb on you, or going to pick up your herb, I guess. I don't know what it is. He didn't get caught driving under the influence, so maybe he was just grabbing his weed. You might as well put on your seatbelt. You don't want to make yourself any more of a target than you already are.
Some of these arrests, it's just like, what were you thinking? I mean, for example, like the Nick Gage arrest... the bank robbery, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you know, I don't want to give advice for robbing banks, and I've never robbed one myself or anything like that, but, you know, just from watching movies, I always thought the idea was that you wear a disguise or a mask or a pantyhose or something on your head. I think that was from Raising Arizona, but he did none of the above. He robbed the bank in broad daylight without a mask on, and his face was right there in the cam, and he got caught. We're going to head to a break. We'll talk more about this wackiness when we return. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Joined today by Mike Sempervivi, as we always are, talking all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour here on the program. And last night was the UFC Fight for the Troops show, and it was a fun event as far as some good fights, made some stars, I believe, or at least made some people more into stars than they had been in the past. And nice night for the troops as well. And Mike, what were your thoughts?
I love the show. I mean, I know people say, God, you get this oversaturation point when it comes to so many fight nights and Tribute for the Troops and all of those shows out there. I have always disagreed with that until you get companies like Ford and involved in things like that, and you grow to a point of having those major types of sponsors. I mean, to have too much visibility right now, I still don't think is a bad thing. I don't treat these shows like USA, Tuesday night fights and ESPN's Friday night fights, what it's turned into and everything. I don't look at it that way. I think the more shows to have on are okay as long as there's, you know, legit stuff on them. And this was a legit show, not for the fights as much as it was. I think, I'm not sure if it was you or Dave who said it was very much like a telethon. And it really was, and I thought how they put in they intercut the stories of the brain injuries and talking to the troops about the money that has been raised in the past by the UFC. The fights themselves were good, but because of the way it was done and because of the, you know, just it was a great idea. The fact that they took advantage of the fact you can text now donations. I mean, I'm sure they made out again really well. I just thought the whole thing from top to bottom was very, very good, and thankfully the fights that were on ended up being pretty exciting too, because the undercard seemed to have a lot of decision fights on it, but once the main card started, there was, you know, good action stuff.
Yeah, it was not one of those cards. It was like a big marquee card, but it really delivered in the ring, and actually it wasn't a marquee card going in, but some of these guys might be marquee names going out. Probably the two to talk about in particular are Matt Mitrione, who beat Tim Haig, and also Melvin Gallard, who is a huge underdog, ended up beating Evan Dunham, actually destroyed Dunham in the first round and put him away. The Mitrione fight, he went out there with Tim Haig, and for those of you that saw him on Ultimate Fighter, I hated this man on Ultimate Fighter. I thought he was... I mean, obviously, there was the heel aspect as well, but his fights were horrendous, just absolutely horrendous. He was a football player. He had no idea what he was doing. He had no cardio. He got tired. Just these wretched, wretched fights. And he ended up being signed by the company. He's training in a real camp. He's doing actual mixed martial arts training. He's a great athlete. And he's picking this up very, very fast. He is now 4-0. He went in there and beat the crap out of Tim Haig. And then afterwards cut this great promo. He's got tons of charisma. I don't know how far he will be able to advance in this sport, but he is certainly advancing very, very quickly. And, I mean, they've got something in Matt Mitrione. I don't know really what yet, but he's on the verge of... I think at this point he is a star. I would not say he's a megastar, a superstar, anything like that, but he's certainly on his way.
Almost everybody that opened their mouths last night did themselves a favor, with the exception of the guys who are actually going to be on the pay-per-view on February 5th. I mean, Mitrione was just, it's, you know, you hated him so much on the show, and he had such craptastic fights, and you didn't want to see somebody knock the smirk off his face, but after this, it's just like, you know, now they've got a great tweener guy. He's going to be... there's going to be more people than ever that actually get behind him because he is so athletic. He's improved immensely. And, I mean, from the time he started out, I mean, it's from the Kimbo fight to Beltran to now. I mean, he looked really good. He's got the, you know, an easy, you know, everybody seems to have a move that, you know, everyone knows. He's got the left kick and the left punch, you know, combination, and he's going to ride with that until somebody's able to stop it. And he did himself big-time favors last night, especially because of how good the promo was. And again, he and Pat Barry did exactly what you beg for guys to do, which is create a fight. We might not see it, but we probably will. It was a very smart thing for both guys to do. One, for Barry to call him out, but two, for Mitrione to do everything he did. He thanked the troops. He thanked his hands. I mean, he just did everything right in that post-match promo and then, you know, made, you know, a crack at Pat Barry, which, again, that's all you can really ask for. Just a really great performance for him. And, you know, bye-bye Tim Haig. It's his first fight back in the UFC after being out for a couple months, and he'll probably be gone again after this.
Yeah, Pat Barry earlier in the show, after he won his fight, he did this promo, and he said that, "Matt Mitrione, you're fired!" And I thought, at the time, I was like, what are you talking about? The show's live and Matt Mitrione's in the semi-main. And then Mitrione came out, and I guess he figured Mitrione might lose, and I don't know. Maybe it was something. Maybe they were. I don't know what the deal was here, but Mitrione did not, in fact, lose. He won, and then he said, "Come on, Pat Barry." So they built up a fight here, and it was fine stuff. Melvin in the main event. Melvin Gallard looked better than he ever has, destroying Evan Dunham. And he's had nearly 60 fights. He's 27 years old. He's been around forever. I thought these fights would have caught up to him by now. I was apparently wrong. He looked great here. And he wants a championship match by the end of the year. He thinks he should be in line.
Well, you know, he's, I guess he's been the Shelton Benjamin. You know, the blonde hair and the great athleticism. And, you know, people wanting to, for him to put it all together. Now, I don't think Shelton Benjamin ever tested positive for cocaine. But, you know, Guillard's got that story as far as being able to come back from that and being on the right path. And, again, with what, as, you know, as sharp as he looked with Dunham, too. I mean, he just looked really good if he has another couple of fights like that because of the story and everything else. And, you know, again, just 155 is a good class. Absolutely. You know, especially with who is on top of 155, there's not Maynard and Edgar. What are they always faulted for? There's no color there. There's no, you know, charisma there, a lot of people always say. And Guillard's got that, you know, going for him. So, yeah, if he does keep on a winning streak, why not? It does make sense.
Best part about the cocaine failure is it occurred shortly after he was accusing Joe Stevenson of being on growth hormone. Then he failed his own test for cocaine. That's poetic justice right there. So anyway, the other big fight on the show was a not really a number one contenders match. I talked about this last night with Dave. I don't understand this, but I don't know. Mark Hominick and George Roop. It was only a number one contenders match for one man. If Hominick won, he got a shot against Jose Aldo Jr. And if he did not win, then George Roop did not get the shot. I don't know, but he won. He destroyed him, so he's getting the shot. And,
okay, well, I don't know why. See, I'll say this, okay. Say you got Mark Hominick, and then you have Chad Mendez and Omagawa, right, coming up on the undercard of Silva and Belfort. Obviously, it's like if, you know, you have two equal guys, I don't know, in wrestling or something like that. You have Lex Luger and Sting, you know, both, you know, on the cusp of going after Ric Flair's, you know, title and, you know, they keep winning matches, and they're going to keep having matches, but one of them gets beaten by Randy Mulkey. Do you give Randy Mulkey the title shot? No, you give Sting the title shot, and I think that's, you know, if Hominick won it, because it's five in a row now for him, okay, you go, okay, that does make sense, but, you know, if Roop lost this, he would have been cut. So you can't turn around and give him a shot just because he beat Hominick. It's not like he beat Aldo in a non-title fight or something like that. You would look, I would assume, at Chad Mendez and Omagawa and go, okay, well, the winner of that gets the shot. Plus, the other thing is, Hominick's only getting this shot, I would assume, because Grisby lost, and the fact that he's supposed to fight in a couple months in Toronto. And being Canadian, I figured that's what it was, too. So I think it was that was the reason, but if he happened to lose, they have a reason to get him out. You don't have to put him on the Toronto show, and then you let Mendez and Omagawa fight him, you know, down the line. Because, again, you want Aldo back, but you don't need anything for that pay-per-view in Toronto to sell it besides George St. Pierre, and he's going to be on there anyway. So you could have waited till, you know, the pay-per-view after that in May before you had the Aldo defense, you know, in case Omagawa or Mendez, who I assume is going to win that fight, got the fight.
Problem is, you know, you wouldn't put... Here's my thing with this. If... When you use the Randy Mulkey example, I mean, obviously, I mean, I can make an exception for this fight because there was supposed to be an Aldo fight last month and he got hurt, and so this was kind of a last-minute sort of deal. But 99% of the time, UFC books fights for that are to be competitive. The idea is they're booking competitive fights. They're not booking mismatches. I'm actually up against a break. Let me take everybody to break, and then I'll talk about this when I get back, because I have a lot to say about this and the idea of number one contenders matches for only one man. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking about the Mark Hominick-George Roop match, which was a number one contenders match only for one man. Hominick, if he won, he was getting a shot at Aldo, and if George Roop beat Hominick, George Roop would not get the shot. And I find that to be strange. And as I noted before the break, I will be fine with an exception for this fight because it kind of fell together in the sense that Aldo was scheduled to fight in January and he injured himself, and so that put him out of action for a while, and so this was kind of put together at the last minute. But in general, the idea that a number one contenders match is only a number one contenders match for one of the two people, I don't understand that because UFC does not book mismatches. If they regularly booked mismatches, and the idea was they really wanted Mark Hominick to get a shot at the championship, and so they had Mark Hominick face a guy who was 1-10, with the idea that obviously he was going to win, and he would hopefully there would not be a terrible upset, and he would go on to get his championship match. If that's what you're going to do, that's fine. However, in this situation here, and in 99% of UFC matches, the idea is that the fights are booked to be competitive. And I have heard Joe Silva in the past state that when he books championship matches, his goal as a booker is to come up with a challenger who is going to beat the champion. That's the idea. You don't try to book a match and go, okay, well, Brock Lesnar as champion is a great champion, and I'm going to come up with a contender that's going to lose to him. That's not what he thinks. He goes in there and he goes, okay, I'm going to come up with a guy who is going to beat Brock Lesnar. That's his goal as a booker. And in all of his fights, they try to match guys up, and oftentimes based on a fight that is going to be competitive. So that stands to reason that if these fights are going to be competitive, then I don't understand why only one guy would have a championship match on the line. Because if a guy is good enough to get a championship fight, if he deserves a championship match, and a guy who is apparently at his level to the point that the fight will be competitive, if that guy beats him, then to me, he should be the number one contender.
But how many, not every fight can be a number one contendership or be for a title fight. I mean, I know that the obviously they want the most competitive fights that they could put out there, that they have at that time. But with that said, if you have a, again, yes, you want your championship matches, you want somebody to go out there who's going to be able to beat the champion. Now, realistically here, obviously you're not sure how Aldo's going to come back, but who at 145 pounds right now, without dropping down from 155, who at 145 right now has Aldo not gone through, or do you not think he can go through? So right there, I mean, you go, okay, well, the same thing with GSP at 170, or Anderson Silva at 185. I mean, you have dominant champions, and just, you have to create some contenders for them, but not everything can be a number one contenders match. And again, if it would have been one thing if Roop has been playing on Hominick's level right now. He hasn't been. He's been...
Well, if he beats him, then he has.
But no, he hasn't, because that means he got... Okay, he got a win. That's great. Now he's 3-4-1 in his last seven fights. Chad Mendez, on the other hand, would be the guy I would assume, in theory, would be slotted behind Hominick, or at least the Mendez-Omagawa winner. Mendez, who is undefeated in the UFC, I mean, I will say, or in WEC, and they would probably not want him there, too, because Aldo has dominated and destroyed wrestlers, and he went through Faber. Odds are he would go through Mendez, and, you could hypothetically say in the same way. So, again, I would figure both Omagawa and Mendez, who have had far more quality wins in WEC, would be next in line to fight Aldo. So just because Roop won that fight doesn't springboard him past those other guys as a number one contender fight. You have to look at it as basically like almost like a warm-up fight. Zab Judah had this problem in boxing. He was supposed to face Floyd Mayweather Jr., and he lost his warm-up bout. Now, the guy he lost the warm-up bout to didn't automatically get the shot, but actually Judah ended up getting it anyway, but he should never have. They were wondering who was going to face Floyd Mayweather. It wasn't a number one contendership match as much as it was for Hominick to hold on to his position as number one contender. And again, that is, there's the fallacy in that, because most, you know, there's people that would say, okay, yeah, he's had five wins in a row, but with that said, he's only getting it because he's Canadian.
Well, again, with this example, I'm fine, because it was basic. This was what had to be done in this situation. But in the future, I would just say, well, if you're trying to determine the best contender for the champion, then why wouldn't you do Mark Hominick versus Chad Mendes, and the winner gets a shot? Shouldn't that be what this is about?
That's true. And to be honest with you, I don't know why. I mean, I thought Grisby, well, I would have had Grisby get the next shot. Okay, he loses. That's fine. I thought it was going to be Mendes and Omagawa, because they had already announced that match, and it would make the most, I thought it was going to make the most sense. So for them to do, it did surprise me when they said, okay, well, Hominick is going to get the shot, but, you know, obviously because of what went around it, you know. But again, yeah, Mendes, but again, also you're splitting hairs there too, as far as Mendes and Hominick. It's, you know, you'd probably get a 50-50 response on who people would think would win that fight anyway, so it's not like he's that far ahead of him. It's just that both of those guys, I think, were several steps ahead of Roop, who I really thought was going to get cut if he lost.
And I was also wondering, and I don't know about this one either, but last month, Brian Stann fought, and fought Chris Lieben, which looked like a great fight, ended up being a really fun fight. I don't know why they didn't hold that one off for this show. I mean, why would you not headline this show with Brian Stann?
I thought the same thing, except for I just maybe thought that they wanted to get Stann on pay-per-view, as he's only, you know, a couple steps away. That's the only thing I could think of, but that actually surprised me too. But though, in hindsight, though, it actually worked out probably the best way it should, because, oh, you know, again, three of the guys on there, Pat Barry, Guillard, and I think it may have been Matt Wyman too, all had a story about family and military. So it actually did work out for the best that way, although, yeah, it was, you know, you screamed.
That's
it was
true,
pretty
but
obvious
if you had
being on the show.
In hindsight, a former military hero, you know, if you had Brian Stann go in there and in the main event of the show on a military base destroy Chris Lieben, I mean, you've got a megastar right there.
Yeah, but, you know, also at the same time, what if he goes out and gets knocked out by Chris Lieben badly or something like that? I mean, you know.
Then you've got a great heel.
That's... People don't hate Lieben like that anymore. It's going to be like, well, I don't know. I wonder if Meathead ends up with more fans than Lieben did.
GSP and Anderson Silva could be in the works if both guys win their next fight. Don't get me into this again, but your thoughts on that fight?
I guess if they were both out of opponents, which I guess you can make the claim that they are now anyway, then fine, I guess, if, you know, to have that one big mega matchup, but I would wait till you absolutely had to do it before you did it. If this is something where GSP is going to move up permanently, that's fine. I just, you know, when you look at the size of the dudes and how they're built, I mean, because I guess people will point out that, well, GSP's got a really long reach, and he's got a far longer reach than a lot of those guys at 205. Okay, that's true. But, you know, except for, like, I mean, Akiyama is about his size, and he fights at that weight. He should really be dropped down. Jake Shields will fight at that weight. He's, you know, the same size. I mean, it's, I'm not saying he can't beat Silver or Belfort or Tommy or anything like that, but it's like, again, unless you really have to do it, either him personally or for business, I don't see the reason to kind of pique interest with it and get the ball rolling on it. I'm completely fine with him at 170. I really am. If he wants to move up, cool. But
well, I mean,
I'm fine with him. I'm fine with just, you know, why do you have to have super fights? I just don't get it.
I mean, he would move up. I mean, this would be a permanent move up, and he wants to, because if he didn't want to, there wouldn't be this goal of adding muscle over the past year to make his way up to 200 pounds walking around. I mean, you know, the fact that he is doing that shows that he is ready to make a permanent move up to 185. Perhaps he's felt he's cleaned out the division, the whole nine yards. I mean, to me, it's pretty clear this is something that he wants to do, and it's not a one-time thing.
Well, if that's the case, there's your July Super Show, like they've had for the last 2 years. I mean, there's where you have the big July, around July 4 show. I'm not sure when it's going to be this year, but then, yeah, because what else do? You don't, I guess you could have him fight a guy, but why? No, you don't. You just forget about even him having a fight at 185. If he's confident enough to go up to that weight, then you definitely do make that fight right off the bat.
Because July 4th.
What's the reason not to?
They are doing July 4th weekend in Vegas.
There you go.
So there you go. That would be the fight. The great Khali situation, I don't know what it is. No one does. Basically, Khali was, he had an appearance. Again, that's all we know. I don't know if it was an autograph signing or what the deal was. The problem is, this took place in India, and there's about 15 stories out about what happened. All we know for sure is that there was great Khali appeared somewhere, and at that same location, at some point during the day, and we don't even know if Khali was there or not. The initial report said he was there, and later reports said that he had left. In fact, Khali says he'd been gone for a half hour before this occurred. There was an incident, and shots were fired. By who? Nobody seems to know. The original story said it was Great Khali's bodyguards. Khali said he had no bodyguards. There were claims that the bodyguards were drunk. There were claims that people were trying to get at Khali. There were claims that people were trying to get at the bodyguards' guns. Regardless, shots were fired. The injured appeared to be grown men, although the initial reports were that the gunfire had gone into a crowd of children. It's just a ridiculously, well, it's just a ridiculous story. And what happened? We may not ever know, actually, at this point, based on the number of stories coming out. So, I really don't know what to say about it, except that Khali up on TMZ.com right now has said that he's very sorry about what happened. He was not there. He has no bodyguards. He doesn't know how those stories got out, so you can check that out, and perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Lots of stuff to talk about today. We were discussing the Great Khali shooting incident before the break. And, Mike, anything to add to that story?
No, I saw a story, it may have even been the TMZ one, which, you know, and this one makes sense because there's, you know, a story of, like, Great Khali, wasn't even around in all of this stuff. I guess he went to dinner. One of the stories is he went to dinner at the Punjabi deputy speaker's house. A crowd gathered. He went outside. The crowd became restless, and then the shots were fired. And I guess I don't know if you'd said this, stories about the bodyguards possibly being drunk, too, and just a big mess. And no fun in India right now, although, you know, Khali hasn't been back in America for quite some time. I wonder if they'll break him out for the Royal Rumble.
It's very possible. He was over there filming a reality show, and it is over. He came in second and could be back for the Rumble. So there you go. We got a million emails here, so let's get going. How come TNA didn't use Hogan's Real American theme as his entrance song and used the American-made one, which wasn't as good? I realize Jimmy Hart had a hand in that one. Surely Real American was the most iconic one for Babyface Hogan. Well, the issue is ownership rights. And I'm sure WWE has the ownership for that song, and they're not giving it to TNA. Did Tom Lawler use it for one of his UFC walkouts? He used something. I don't know if it was Real American.
I can't remember if he did or not. Did he do that when he was doing the Severn thing?
I don't remember which one they used for that. If anybody remembers, email us, and we'll try to clear it up next week. What are the chances of TNA bringing a TV taping or a pay-per-view to the UK? Maximum Impact Tour always has 6,000-plus in Wembley Arena, drawing considerably better than they do in the U.S. They always bring all the top talent over here anyway. Would it cost them that much more to bring the TV equipment with them? And any news on a deal being sorted out in the U.K. yet? I've heard nothing new about the U.K., and there was supposed to be an announcement weeks back, so that's not good. And as far as a pay-per-view is going to be difficult because it really can't be live, Or it'd have to be at a weird time during the day in the UK in order for it to air live at 7 p.m. in the U.S. So I think that's the deal with the live, why they're not going live. As far as like a taped television show, I mean, they've done shows. I mean, it is interesting. They've aired footage of shows in Japan on separate shows, but I don't know why they've never taped television in the UK and aired it over here. I think it would look really cool, actually. So I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, it took forever and a day for them to run the New Japan show from last year, too. And that's where I disagree with you a little bit on, you know, as far as running a taping somewhere else. It's not about, like, getting out of, at least for me, getting out of Orlando because those people are burned out or anything, because they're the best thing that they have because of how loyal they are. Yes, it's for free, but they're in there, you know, biting on the stuff that, for the most part, they're supposed to every week. But when you have a chance to have a crowd, you know, when they go into the Hermes Sadler, just set up a couple cameras or something like that and get that house show experience and put it up on your website or, you know, running a taping. If you run Saturday night in England, I mean, I think with post-production, by the time you come back, you have the show up for Thursday and take advantage of that big crowd or that rowdy crowd or something like that. You know, it's, again, I'm not sure how much help they would get from Spike that way if they did it, but, you know, it would be something I would try if it doesn't cost too much.
Here's the problem. I have no problem with them airing clips of hot house shows on the television. I think that they should do that. But you got to look like at the long term of taping outside of Orlando. And the thing is, ROH on HDNet is no more in a couple of months here. They just taped the final episodes this past week, and apparently the main event on the show, which was Roderick Strong and the Kings of Wrestling against the Briscoes and Davey Richards, I believe was the main event, said to be the best match in the history of ROH on HDNet, and that's the swan song. I mean, that show's canceled, and obviously, you know, while they don't have traditional ratings, the HDNet felt that it was not worth the expense. Now, if you look at Impact, I mean, to me, this is not even a mystery, because last week on the show, we were talking about how they did a big number for the post-Genesis Impact, but the show tanked throughout the program and ended at a 1.15, or maybe it was 1.16. And if I recall correctly, I noted that this exact same thing happened at Bound for Glory, and I said the exact same thing was going to happen here, and the show this week would do probably the exact number that the post-Genesis show ended at, which was at a 1.15. And in fact, Impact this week did a 1.15 rating. I called that. Now, how that ties into this whole thing is, I think you know, Mike, and I know, and everybody who's honest with themselves about TNA knows, that when they move out of Orlando and they tape on the road, it's going to do the exact same rating. Now, when they move out of Orlando, there are a lot of added expenses for taping a television show on the road. And you know who's going to be picking up that tab right now is Spike TV. Now, if you're Spike TV and you're picking up the tab for all of these shows outside of Orlando, and the show ends up doing the exact same rating, which it's going to do, then you are perhaps moving into that territory of, is this worth the expense? Is this television show worth the expense that we're putting out every single week? You know, we've given them live shows, we've let them go out on the road, we're picking up the tab, and they still do the exact same rating. Is this worth it to us? And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. Maybe they'll just say, okay, it's back to Orlando permanently now, no more taping outside. Or maybe they'll just say, you know what? Time to pull the plug. We're not going to renew your deal. So these are things that need to be considered when you talk. It's more than just we're going to have a hot crowd. You got to look at the situations involving the monetary outlay and whether it's going to be worth it for Spike TV and what decisions they might make as a result.
Especially after they've canceled the whatever it was called Explosion. Not Explosion. What was the
Reaction?
Reaction after they've canceled that show already too.
Because that show was not worth the money.
No, and you're right. Now, I'll say this from as a fan point of view who's got to watch it, I would just like to see it elsewhere. Would it make sense monetarily? Of course not. For my own greediness, I think that they should. And you know what? As far as the extra cost for Spike, well, you know, they've dumped a lot into this as it's been, and they always end up with that 1-1 anyway. So,
yeah but again, you got to look at it this way, too. Yes, I've been to house shows that have been awesome, but that's not what we're going to get on television. We're going to get an Impact show on TV. And the people that go to TNA house shows, the TNA house shows in America, I mean, they're not doing huge numbers. I mean, there are plenty of house shows that draw less people than show up for free in Orlando. So if you run a house show and you've got 800 people that pay to show up, number one, you've got 800 people there. Now, if they're paying to show up at this event, they're going to be hardcores. So there is no guarantee that if you draw 800 fans in Charlotte, North Carolina for a TNA TV taping, those hardcore fans are going to react any differently than the people that are already going to the Impact Zone. They may react exactly the same, and there could be less of them.
Well, then you have the thing, too, where they go, okay, well, we had that great thing in Brooklyn last year. They go to a place where they can't actually control the crowd, which is another thing, too, which might screw up something on TV, although when it comes to TNA, you know, everything's kind of screwed up as it is. But you do have that problem, too, if they go to somewhere, if they try to do the Brooklyn thing all over again and they don't get the reactions they want there.
And they're going to be taping two episodes of Impact and two episodes of Explosion, so you're going to have to try and keep those people excited for 4 hours or more of an Impact television taping and not a house show.
I can't tell you how painful. They used to be awful back in the day, the WWF tapings that would go on for like 4 hours when they would, you know,
go to different
places.
They were even longer than that. They were
much. Oh, God, I mean, they would just feel like they would go on for days. And even at the time where they would do Super Astros and Afterburn and then do Raw and stuff like that, I mean, those were bad enough. I mean, they just as long, too. So, and again, somebody said it, too. Running the shows out of order, too, just will baffle a crowd that's not in Orlando even more.
Emerson here says, do you think a tournament of champions of sorts would work in UFC where all the champions, as long as they weren't injured, had an open weight tournament against each other? There will be no open weight tournaments in America.
Please, God, no.
Yeah, I mean, this is not that. I mean, they had open weight tournaments in Japan that were great, but the point is you're not going to be able to get an open weight tournament sanctioned in America. So that's not going to work. And as far as a tournament, let's just wait and see how the Strikeforce tournament does. All right, let's see what we've got here. Why did WWE start the Tim White suicide angle? Because someone lost their mind, I think is the answer there.
It developed a life of itself, too. I think they did that one thing with The Undertaker, and then there was so much outrage that they figured, okay, we're going to play with this. And
well, Vince found it hilarious, is the other key.
Well, that's true.
Carl here says, I've really enjoyed your interviews with Dutch Mantel over the past year. But something he wrote in his blog last September surprised me after meeting Lindsay Hayward, the former NXT giant, at Gathering of the Juggalos. He was very impressed and said, quote, her in-ring work was smooth and precise and not at all like you would imagine a person so big would be. I expected clumsiness, but she was very well coordinated. The reports we've heard from Brian and Dave have regularly been that she is a disaster in the ring. Dutch has a great eye for talent and similar philosophies to you guys. How is it possible to have completely opposite views of a wrestler? I've actually never seen her work. We're just talking reports that have come out of Florida Championship Wrestling. And quite frankly, the reports that come out of Florida Championship Wrestling, I would question those before I would question Dutch Mantel, to be honest with you. So I don't know the answer to that. I will make a determination once I see her work. And she's signed with Lucha Libre USA, so presumably we'll see her work at some point if they ever get back on television.
That's an interesting signing, I guess, for her size. I don't know. Maybe she's athletic, though, and again, they try to shoehorn people in Florida into roles that they want them to be, so maybe she was really loose out there that day and, I don't know, got to do whatever it was she liked, and and maybe he's impressed with her athleticism more than anything else.
Let's see here. Who do you think has watched the most professional wrestling matches in their lifetime? Would it be a lifelong promoter? I guess who is the oldest promoter right now?
I don't know. Vince is what, in his 60s?
But Vince doesn't, Vince doesn't watch
of
all of the
guys,
house shows.
Jim Crockett Jr., but you wonder, you know, as far as promoters go, too, I don't know if they would have watched any more than any booker or even a wrestler would have.
What if it would be a guy? I mean, Dave has obviously watched a lot of wrestling. I don't know if he's watched the most of anybody in the world, because obviously he doesn't watch all the house shows and that sort of thing. I wonder if it would be maybe a guy like Earl Hebner, who has been like a head referee for a major promotion for decades. And, you know, he's watched all of the TV, pay-per-view. He's seen all these house show matches. I mean, it could be a guy like him.
Or a guy like Jim Ross, who was a referee, worked in the office, worked in talent relations, would watch guys coming in, you know, tapes of guys coming in and all that stuff, too. I mean, it's, I have no idea how you would actually judge that.
This person here says, this is an interesting question, do you think if Spike dropped Impact altogether and somehow got the rights to show Attitude Era Raws in the same time slot, the ratings would be A, better, or B, would not collapse? I think they would be the same or better.
Yeah, I would definitely say I absolutely guarantee not collapse. But yeah, I mean, I can't see it. I could see it spiking up to be like 2.5 or something like that for a couple weeks, but I can see it bouncing out to be just the one that TNA gets. I can absolutely see that.
Especially if they're airing them in sequential order so that you could follow the storylines and that sort of thing. I think it'd be interesting too, because I think there are a lot of people also that romanticize a lot about that period, and they would watch those WWE undercards from the Attitude Era and go, my God. God, that is some horrible programming.
Choppy, choppy your pee-pee.
People seem to forget that era. There was some horrendous undercard work. We have to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, tell us about the New Japan CMLL cards from the last couple of days.
Yes, being the intercontinental people that we are, which, by the way, New Japan is going to have the intercontinental title of their own. That's what they're going to call their American title when they swing down on tour in May. But they ran shows with CMLL. They do this every year, run a couple shows together, and the big news coming out of it, Ryusuke Taguchi defeated Mascara Dorada to win the CMLL welterweight title, which, along with Jushin Liger having the middleweight title, that's another CMLL title, which has gone over to New Japan. Mystico seemed to get over finally in Japan. Probably has something to do with him not facing Tiger Mask, and they defeated Averno in a match that was supposed to be very, very good. And Apollo 55 knocked off Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega, together known as the Golden Lovers, to regain the IWGP Junior Tag Team title match as well. So CMLL and Liger's work with them looks like it's not stopping anytime soon, and New Japan is collecting CMLL belts. So see how that goes.
We shall see how that goes. We are pretty much finished for today, everybody, but head on over to WrestlingObserver.com. All of the latest news is up there every day. Daily news updates. We've got columns, radio shows. We got a lot of stuff coming up on the radio as well, by the way. A couple of weeks, we're going to be joined by Chris Jericho. He's going to be on talking his career. He's done a couple of interviews recently talking about how he really has no desire to return to WWE anytime soon. Got a new book coming out. He's touring with his band. We're going to talk to him about all of that. It should be a very fun time. Les Thatcher is going to be on the show this coming Tuesday, and next week, hopefully, a former WWE writer is going to be on talking about a lot of stuff from 2009 and 2010. In fact, there's a blog that he put up that was actually quickly pulled, but we'll talk to him about everything on there. John Piermani is his name, so that's coming up in a couple of weeks. All of the episodes are up there. We've done since 2005, over 5,000 hours of audio, so if you love this show and want more, check it out. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. We are out of here. We'll be back next week with a new show, with a preview of the Royal Rumble, and talking the road to WrestleMania should be a good time. So take care. We'll talk to you then. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.